They thought of that. No, nothing was that. And then on that, it was a bad Sunday. We picketed on the Saturday for, we tried to get the big merchants downtown to let us stand in their doorway in case it rained, you know. And not everyone refused, but the Regent Hotel on Hastings and Main, they said we could. We could have put a table up in their entrance and get signatures that way and money. That and we did. And there was one CCF woman, Miss Guttridge. She was an aldermanic. She was an alderman of the city. She was the only one that stood on that picket line trying to trying to get the money, you know. And that, she's dead now, Miss Guttridge is. And I came home all in that day. I was all day long picketing, and not picketing, jingling a can. And I remember saying to my husband, I'm going to stay in bed late tomorrow morning because I'm so tired. And he called me, he's always up early, and he, oh, come, you've got to get up. But I said, what's the matter now, why? He said, they've gassed the boys out. You know, they put the tear gas on them as they came out. Oh, and it was terrible. Out of the post office, they did. Mm-hmm. They hurt several. In fact, some of them have died, and I'm sure it was through that been done to them. Then those who's got the full blast of it, and then they picked up five of them, the police, and five of the boys, put them into jail, and then we had the trouble of defending them in court, the women of the Housewives League and that, they did most of it. We got the best lawyer in Vancouver at the time. Adam Smith Johnson, his name was. He was an Englishman. And he defended them, and he made a wonderful job of it. He got four of them off. And he got one on, and we know that the one that was taken on didn't do it. Supposed to have thrown a huge tub through Nabob's window. Nabob had a place at the back, next to the CPR station downtown, across the way, Nabob's, and they had one of these fancy tubs with a tree in it. Well, the boy was gassed. He couldn't see. He couldn't have picked up the tub put through the window. Mm-hmm. But somebody had it, but he was stood rubbing his eyes near it. And they took him up, and he did 5 years. Yes. We felt terrible on that. Yes. That's the sort of thing they do. They terrorize people then. They just terrorize them. I've talked to people, in fact, I went to Britain, and I talked to them about what it was like there in the Depression, and it was nothing like our Depression. Not for brutality. Mm-hmm. They put a widow with a deformed son from Fifth Avenue, down in Fifth Avenue, on all her stuff on the street in the snow. And they put her there, out. And she phoned up here. I was just putting my husband's supper out, and she phoned crying to know would I come. So I went straight away. I went there. It took me about 15 minutes. I used to drive a car in those days. And there was all this furniture. Really, it would be very valuable today because it was mostly antiques, you know. She herself was a pioneer of Vancouver. She owned property right down in the city. Only she sold, because had to sell it because her husband had a long session of cancer. And at that time, you couldn't get in the hospital. There was no hope for anything, you know. Mm-hmm. That. So she nursed him at home. And the money all went that way. And then she had this deformed boy, only about that high. And put him out in the street. It was terrific here at that time. No one, that's why so many of them have come after me to know this and that and other thing, because they knew I was right in the middle of it. But the thing was, I couldn't keep a diary even. I was too tired. I always got up at 6:10. I don't know why 6:10, but I always got up, gave my husband his breakfast, and then I did what work I could in the house. It wasn't this house, it was a smaller house. And then late years it was this house. And I did it, and my girl would help. And I used to be peeling potatoes about 7 in the morning, ready for the supper at night. I used to get all my supper ready in saucepans and that. And then the man, that friend of ours that we used to keep, he used to look to see if there was any smoke. It was from the old coal and wood stoves we had there, see. And if he couldn't see any smoke, he'd come over and set the fire, set it going every day. Mm-hmm. That
you were always up and out every day?
Every day, Saturdays and Sundays.
Can you talk a bit more about the kind of organizing that you did?
My organizing really was for the Housewives League, but out branch from that was the Civic, Civic Defense Committee. That was to defend the boys, you know. Mm-hmm. The boys, they had no one else to do it. And they knew the women of the hostels were pretty good. That's how I came into it. They phoned up here at 6:00 one Saturday night and asked me if I'd come down right away and bring anybody that I could find with me. Well, I couldn't. I found one or two, but they disappeared when it got hectic. Anyway, we went to have the first meeting in the Hotel Vancouver lobby, the old hotel. They've taken it down now. It was Kitty Corner to Hudson Bay, the old Hotel Vancouver. And Harold Winch gave the meeting, and the Reverend Rodden, he was the Reverend of the church on First United Church on Hastings. They got him. But at last it came to about 3 or 4 of us left, and I happened to be one. And that's how I got into that. That was the boys' Civil Defense Committee. And then from that, when the boys were taken and put in jail, we had to form a committee to look after their defense. Civil Defense Committee we set up then, and I was secretary of that. So I was secretary of the Housewives League, secretary of the Civil Defense Committee. And then Eviction Committee. We had the Housewives League branched out into eviction because some of their members were being evicted, and the weather was so bad. And anyway, I got it. That's how I got into that. Oh, it was from one thing to another. Yes. I hadn't a minute to spare.
How many women were in the Housewives League?
I couldn't tell. It worked. Oh, the executive did a lot of the work. The women met in their branches to advise mm-hmm. and to bring their what was needed forward, what they thought was needed forward. Then the Housewives League executive used to meet every month and decide what to do. That we had a wonderful research director woman. That she, when the Housewives League closed down, she went out of it, and I don't think she has ever done anything in the labor movement since. But she was a good woman, a wonderful woman on research. Yes, she used to take any prices going up. She used to deal with it right from where it was produced, you know, mm. that sort of thing. Yes, she was very effective. Yes.
Do you have an idea of how many women were involved in the league?
Now I couldn't tell you. See,
right, because you were on the exam.
It was difficult to tell. If I kept my books, I could have told you. If I'd kept those. Books.
And did the women come from different political groups?
From
different political groups?
And they came from. They were just ordinary women, mm-hmm. and they were desperate. See, and some of them who weren't desperate knew that they could help in some way or another and came in. That there were quite a number of capable women in it.
How would the women find out about the league? How would they hear of it?
Word of mouth mostly. Mm-hmm. Oh, and then the papers all. The Sun has got a lot in the morgue about it, you know. They've got a lot in the morgue about the Housewives League. I know. And
What was I going to say?
I had a flash came in my mind then about something that was quite important. Maybe it'll come back.
Yeah.
And anyway, that's we were worn out, I'll tell you, some of us, really worn. Oh, I know. A woman in... there was a camp on Little Mountain, we call it, the old timers all call it that, that was the name for it. It wasn't developed into a park then. Mm. It was all quarry and rough and very dangerous for kiddies to get there, you know, because they'd climb up the rocks. That. Well, anyway, there was a camp there put for cleaning, examining men going in the army.
Hmm.
When they were called up, they had a good little mountain camp to be examined, to know if they were fit. Well, a woman from, it was from Vancouver Island, the north part of the island, wrote me, telling me about her husband, who she said was the key worker in a lumber camp. And at that time, there was a great need for lumber, you know,
mm-hmm.
for the war. And anyway, she said, He's stayed there, has been there 10 days. And she says most of it is sitting on a seat, waiting for a turn and that. So asked me if the Housewives League could do anything about it. Well, we knew that there was the war effort needed the wood, you know, we need that. And... we protested that to the government right away. And of course, the government contacted us, and we told them all about it. That, and they moved in it. The government moved, and I remember the Sun newspaper people phoning me up and telling me that did I know, and I said no, I hadn't heard yet. That they were doing them right away, and that they said it takes 3 days, about 3 days to do it. And seat any longer there. They did them, I think they said 3 days it took, and that. And the camp people wrote me to the league, and that. And another time, several women of the league, they were recruiting for men into the Air Force, and several of the women of the league's husbands had gone, mm-hmm. and they'd had no pay. And I think it was 6 weeks it had no pay, and they couldn't go to Woodward's and get credit. Then you couldn't get credit at Woodward's or Spencer's or the Bay. They were dependent on the little grocers who couldn't afford to give so many credits. They didn't know, mm-hmm. because they hadn't been dealing with them before. And one case, the landlord was putting a woman out of her house because she couldn't pay the rent, hadn't the money. So the league sent three of us to Jericho. That's where the Air Force mm-hmm. had their headquarters. And we went there, and oh, what a reception we got. Mm-hmm. So you're the first people who... First civilians that's ever protested up to the government. To the government, they said, not that. So we said, well, it didn't matter. These people were being put out of their homes. Their children weren't able to have as much to eat as they needed. And something had to be done. In 2 weeks, it was all altered. And then after that, every 2 weeks, they got their check. And then that was one thing that we did. And they told us they were very annoyed that we had interfered, but we didn't. That didn't bother us. But anyhow, another case. An eviction case to us. The people on Fifth Avenue... We had snow on the ground, of course, and were being put out, and a woman was sick, and her husband had been in the Merchant Marine, and he was drowned. But the young boy, about 18, joined the army, and he was in a camp at Chilliwack. And she was there with two girls. And they were putting her out, and there was an old couple living in the basement. And she phoned to the league, and I went down with some other women. And we saw, and the woman we could see was sick. And that, and they were going to evict her and all the rest of it. And we found out all the particulars about it, like. So the day of the eviction... A lot of the league women went down, and we had contacted an awful lot of people. We had contacted the principal of Mount Pleasant School, because the two girls belonging to these women went to his school. And we were that. And oh, we had a wonderful picket line. That all people in fur coats, people... not in our way of life, I'm sure. Some of them, they all picked when the sheriff The sheriff went down to get reinforcements. He'd been there and got all the furniture out with these two men, goons they were, that they'd imported from the States, by the way, and because nobody in Vancouver would do it. And anyway, he went down to get reinforcements. And so we had a meeting from the veranda in the front, and I explained to the crowd, about 200 that had got in front of the house, about what was happening. And I said, now we need your help. And says, this boy, well, we got him from the camp at Chilliwack. He came home quickly, we got him. And I says, this boy is left alone. So I turned to the boy and I said, would you just ask them? I thought it'd be nice if he asked them to help get furniture back in. Mm-hmm. And, oh, he said, Mrs. Jones, I've never spoken in my life to anybody. He was only a young kid. I says, oh, all right. So I told them what it was like, and I says, now, we want help. Come on, all of you. And they all came. I never saw anything like it. You saw people picking up, they were all, they fished, got everything in no time because there were so many there. And they were going up this old winding stairs up where they lived at the top. But we forgot, in all the fuss and bother, we forgot the old couple at the bottom. And we saw this, stove out on the, a big old coal and wood stove out on the sidewalk. And I said, who says that? And this man came forward, an old man, he said, it's ours. And they put us out. We were rooming in the basement. And they put the old couple out. So I didn't know what to think, but I remember saying, put the stove on and turn the pipes that the smoke comes right on the pathway, where they have to go in and out, to the pathway. Turn that up and turn it that way. He did, and he made the biggest fire. I don't know where he got the stuff from. Perhaps some of them got it for him, that you ever saw. And the smoke was all coming out that way. And when the men came back, they tried to... The two men that were working with the sheriff couldn't go through the smoke. It was so it was just on them. I never saw anything like it. And the old man had got... I says, put up your bed. You're sleeping here tonight out on the boulevard. I says, put up your bed on the boulevard. I never saw anything so funny in my life. Some of these women came and helped him, but he worked with them, and they made the bed up on the boulevard, and the police came. The police were laughing. Oh, they really were laughing when they saw the old man, how active he was. The old lady was sick. And anyway, the sheriff came back and said that they couldn't do it. They couldn't get help or something to do it. So all these people there, crowd, put the old people's stuff back, put his stove up and all. That was the funniest eviction, I think, of it. Although there was another eviction that I wasn't in, at Kitsilano, where the sheriff was, goons, as they called them, always called them, the goons were bringing the furniture out of one door, and the people were putting it back in the other door. They had to stop that eviction. Yes, they couldn't carry on with that eviction. And then there was another one on 8th Avenue and Knight Road. Not far, 8th Avenue, in the snow, this was too. And they phoned for me, and I was the only name everybody knew, you know, and they saw so much publicity in the paper, how I'd fight them and all the rest of it. So I went down there quickly, and I looked at this truck, and I said, thought myself, I know that man's face. Anyhow, I began making inquiries who he was, and I found he was a member of the IWA union. So Harold Pritchett, I don't know whether you've ever heard of Harold Pritchett. He did a lot of work in the labor movement. He was in the office then there, and I tried to get on the phone next door, and there was a fellow speaking to supposed to be to the province. He was a province reporter, but he was speaking to a woman, and silly, crazy talk to keep me off the phone. Anyway, at last I said, I have to phone into the office. And I said, I wonder if you would mind getting off the phone, me to do it. And he did then, but I phoned to Harold Pritchett. And I said, do you know that one of your members is helping to evict a woman with, I think it's 6 children? He said, good gracious, no, who is that? I'll come over right away. So anyhow, I told him the address. And that before Harold ever got there, they all depend on the truck drivers, because they can't get a truck driver, they can't get anyone to evict them. The truck drivers are in the union too. So anyway, I went back and I told them about it. They made off with the truck and everything. When Harold got there, they had gone. And the eviction never came up. Yes. And going back to the other eviction from the old house, the top and the bottom, there were 2 girls there, and they were just being terrified with the police and the sheriff and all, you know. They went to Mount Pleasant School. And I got the schoolmaster on the picket line, too, of that one. I phoned in, told him 2 of his pupils were being terrified with them, and he came. Anyway, years and years after, when my daughter was married, having her baby in the hospital, I went in to see her, and before I got to her, the woman in the bed first nearest the door said, oh, Mrs. Jones. And I said, oh, I can't, who are you? I can't remember. And she told me she was one of those girls that I'd evicted, that I had stopped the eviction of. And that my daughter was an expat. She couldn't understand how in the world they called me Mrs. Jones, you know, as she called me Mrs. Jones. Anyway, she told her after. Yes. Mm. So it was, and then this was quite a quite hectic, you know.
Okay. In the Depression, when the Housewives League started, did it work with the Women's Labor League?
No. No, they were set up by the Liberal Party as another, quite a separate thing, no.
The Labour League.
That was really, they were set up to combat labour. See?
What did they do? The Women's Labour League?
Oh, yes. They did a lot of good work back in the period before that.
Ah.
Yes, quite a lot. They did wonderful work, the Women of the Labour League. Most of them are dead now. They were before the house period.
Right.
That's that.
Did you work with them?
No, because I was bringing up my girl. I belonged to a ratepayers group, but I wasn't active in it. But nobody was active in it. And I belonged to the CCF. I was secretary of that, but it was only for a meeting once a month, and it wasn't very active. But anyway, Margaret was 10 when I went into the real labor movement, when I think of the real labor movement, yes. Mm-hmm.